This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. The siege of Marawi City in southern Philippines is entering its third month. Militants, many drawn from neighboring countries, have pledged loyalty to the Islamic State. Philippines military spokesman, Brigadier General Restito Padilla, said that urban terrain is hampering the army's progress because the rebels are hunkered down in built-up neighborhoods, many of them with civilians they have taken as human shields. Now, President Rodrigo Duterte is asking the Philippine Congress for an extension of martial law in the southern island of Mindanao. He first declared emergency rule on May 23rd. On the line is Professor Rohan Gunaratne, head of the International Center for Political Violence and Terrorism Research in Singapore. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. I want to begin with asking you, is Marawi City and its siege, does that mean that the Islamic State has established a beachhead in the region?
The so-called Islamic State in Syria and Iraq has influenced 62 terrorist and extremist groups in Southeast Asia, including in the Philippines. And these groups have pledged allegiance to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. The three groups that went to Marawi, these groups are following the IS ideology and methodology, and now these groups are using the Marawi battle to recruit more and radicalize more. But certainly militarily, they have suffered a defeat. But they were able to capture and sustain Marawi now for 6 weeks. And government troops are still struggling to recover that city from the grips of local IS groups in the Philippines.
Can we begin just looking on the Philippine side of it? Is it been, as they explain, the particularities of this conflict, the urban nature of the warfare, the use of human shields, or has it been weakness on the part of the Philippine Army? Do they have the capacity? Have they had the training to deal with these kinds of issues? And if not, why so?
There were two reasons why the Philippine military has taken such a long time. One is that the Philippine national security community, the military, the law enforcement and intelligence services were not ready for Marawi because the political leadership, the previous political leaders denied it. And of course, President Duterte focused on fighting drug traffickers. But after Marawi was sieged, President Duterte is the first leader to openly say IS's present in the Philippines. So one is a failure of acknowledgement. So the government agencies, government forces are not ready for Marawi. But after Marawi was besieged by IS, the Philippine troops have done very well. And especially with the cooperation and collaboration of neighboring countries, the Americans, the Australians, and a few other countries. So I believe that Philippine military has done exceptionally good job. But the nature of the battle against IS is such that it's very long and protracted. And IS in Syria and Iraq are instructing the IS in Marawi how to conduct this battle. In fact, Mosul is being presented as the model for Marawi by the IS local leaders. Although, of course, IS was defeated in Mosul. So you can see that this battle in Marawi is a turning point for Southeast Asia because this is the first time IS sieged a city in this region, and it is creating an imagery and a narrative that is recruiting and radicalizing a very tiny percentage of the Muslim community, but a significant percentage in this region.
I want to begin with asking the question of, was it in the minds of the Islamic State leaders to actually capture and hold this? And if they were successful in holding it for a significant time, could they actually have governed as they did in Mosul?
It is a bit complex, but let me explain to you. IS is shrinking in its battle space in Iraq and Syria. they have lost Mosul and they are likely to lose Raqqa and other territories. But IS is expanding globally, and IS has already established a very robust presence in North Africa, in the Arabian Peninsula, in the Caucasus, and in South Asia, Afghanistan, Pakistan. And now IS is spreading into other parts of the world using those vilayats or provinces as beachheads. So what we are seeing is that Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi created a vision of global expansion, and these local groups are now following the model that IS has presented to them using through the social media.
Professor Gunaratnam, can I ask you, is it in these other instances we have conflict zones, entire countries in war? In Southeast Asia, we don't quite have that situation. Is it possible for them to hold territory as large as IS had held in Iraq and Syria?
No, they can't. But I want to say that IS is infiltrating into existing conflict zones. For example, IS has built a very small presence in southern Thailand. IS is planning to infiltrate Rohingya, the Arakan areas in Myanmar. IS has already infiltrated certain parts in eastern Indonesia, in the Sulawesi, that region. But the Indonesian military has been very hard and very tough, and the police have been very tough when it comes to IS presence. They have dismantled themselves. In the Philippines, because of the failure to acknowledge IS, IS grew and they were able to capture the city.
Now, also, we had news, some disputed reports, but that al-Baghdadi himself has been killed. Do you think that his death or developments in other parts of the world in terms of IS organizational leadership will have any impact on developments here?
Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi's death has not been validated or verified by the larger security and intelligence services of the world, like the Americans, the Brits, and the other Arab services that have very good intelligence. It's a claim by the Russians. It is possible it happened, but it's too early to either deny or confirm. What is important to understand is that IS structures, IS ideology is not dependent on one single leadership. So I believe that whether Baghdadi is dead or not, IS will protract and IS ideology will spread, and governments around the world must demonstrate astute and firm leadership to dismantle IS physical infrastructure, and also more strategic leadership to dismantle their thinking, which is now largely online-based.
Last question for you, Professor Gunaratne. The Malaysian situation, Malaysia did supply some militants to the Marawi city siege. What do we know about militancy in Malaysia and also the effectiveness of our counter-terrorism efforts here?
Malaysian Special Branch Counter-Terrorism Division, led by Dato' Ayub Khan, has done a remarkable job to protect Malaysia. Malaysian counterterrorism units are among the best in the region. They are very dedicated, very committed, and they should be fully supported by the government and by the people. And certainly it is true, a very small number of Malaysians have gone to the Philippines to support the terrorists. And the key individual in Marawi who has influenced the IS leader there, Bismillah Hatilon, is a Malaysian. His name is Dr. Mahmud bin Ahmad, and he is on the wanted list of Malaysia. And I want to say that this is not a problem confined to Malaysia, Philippines, or Indonesia. It is a regional problem, it's a global problem, and we all have to work together to contain, isolate, and eliminate IS.
Thank you very much. That was Professor Rohan Gunaratne, head of the International Center for Political Violence and Terrorism Research in Singapore. We'll be back with more business news after this at BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.